Again, thank you, Andy, for leading us in our song service. It's always appreciated. And those that lead us in our public services, we thank you so much for that. We're going to be talking about marriage and nurturing marriage this morning. One of the things, I guess, that it's not frustrating. It's really, I guess, just needing the wisdom to decide. But there are a number of folks in the body that have particular needs and questions. And, some Sundays it'd be probably good to devote 5 minutes to about 10 different topics, something like that, to cover everything that is needed. Well, we've been talking about a lot of things, but it's been a while since I have really had a lesson on marriage, and so I was asked to just bring something, and so that's what I'd like to do this morning. And help me not to forget to sing happy birthday to certain individuals in the body before we dismiss. I think Jasmine's just about going to kill us if we keep this up, but we very much want to appreciate that. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, God saw that for Adam to be alone was not a good thing. And he said, "It's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." And then we read in Genesis 2, one of the reasons I try to use the same font every week is because this sometimes happens. We don't have the same fonts in the computer, so I've experimented. I'm going to go back to the same font again. Okay. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and he closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." September 10th, 2011. Mark, does that ring a bell? That's when Mark and Melody were married. I was going through some old notes and trying to find a particular illustration I thought I had used years ago. And I came across some notes. They asked me to officiate their wedding, and I remember I was a little worried about it because it had rained all week long and it was going to be an outdoor wedding, and the weather just didn't look like it was going to cooperate. But on that day, it was just one beautiful, marvelous, gorgeous day. The skies are filled with these cotton candy clouds and bright blue and beautiful. And I make notes sometimes about things that happen to remind me, this is good, this is bad. And I had made a note, and I just kind of stuck it in the sideline, glowing, because everybody there that day was glowing. It was just marvelous. It was informal. It's one of the few weddings I've done without wearing a tux or a suit. It was informal in that sense. And before the vows were finished, Mark and Mel asked us to form a circle and to pray for them, which is what we did. And I remember a couple of things. Number one, when it came time for Mark to exchange vows, when he said, "I do," he said it like every husband in the world, future husband in the world, should. I mean, it was energetic. "I do," and we loved that. And then the second thing was when it was time to kiss the bride, he kissed her so well, it just about knocked her off her feet. I mean, it was, everybody was glowing. He was glowing, she was glowing, the family was glowing, Heather was glowing. It was just marvelous. And the reason I bring that up is because that's what God intended for it to be. He really intended for marriage to be a good thing. And so often in our world today, it's not looked upon as a good thing, as a blessed thing. It's looked at, oh, do we really have to do this? And more people are saying, why even bother to do it? Just live together, it's not going to work out anyway, and then we won't have to go through the messiness of divorce. And I mean, you know, our society, but that's not how God made this to be. It's meant to be a wonderful thing. As the scriptures say, God said it's not good for man to be alone. It's not good for woman to be alone. We need one another, and the Lord knew that we would need more than just ourselves, and so He gave us a companion. As a matter of fact, He calls the woman in the Bible a helper. Now, unfortunately, there's some that have abused that, and in the King James, it's translated this way, and this is how I first memorized it. The Lord said, "It's not good that the man should be alone. I'll make him a helpmeet for him." And there are a lot of men and many women as well who thought, well, helpmeet, that means servant. You know, honey, make sure the chip and the dips are here when the game starts. You know those kind of silly, foolish things. It really impacted the view of marriage. But, you know, if you really look at the meaning of the word, it's from the Hebrew hazar. It means help, but it also means partner. It means protector. It means defender. It means an ally. It means a bodyguard. And I thought, wow, that's good. I kind of think of my role as protecting Carla, you know, in the family. I think most men think that way. But her role is also to protect me. She's my bodyguard. And that happens in so many ways. Physically, when I'm sick, she takes care of me. There's the wonderful sexual union in marriage that counts. There's so many things. And without that person, we're just not fulfilled as we should be. Every time you preach on marriage, I think, well, there are folks that have been divorced. I certainly don't want to make you feel bad. There are those who are single. Don't want to make you feel bad. There are widows and widowers. I mean, but we all, I think, embrace the idea that marriage, as God made it, was intended to be a blessing and a good thing. And this word is used of God Himself in Psalms 46, verse 1. God, the psalmist says, God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in time of trouble. That's the very same word. He is, go back to that definition, our partner, our protector, our defender, our ally, our bodyguard. Now, isn't that wonderful? And that's the way we're to be with one another as well, especially when it comes to marriage. It's used of God. Well, there are principles that help marriages to last, that nurture marriages. And, you know, you may not hear anything new this morning about marriage. Maybe my hope is that we can remind each other of some very valuable principles. And one of them is that word commitment. Many times when people say, Richard, will you marry us? And, of course, my response is usually, I'm sorry, I'm already married. See, I'm being smart at it. But, you know, when people do that, I know what they mean. I just want to aggravate them. So yes, you know, I'll be proud to. I'll be glad to. And many of them will say, talk about commitment. And then there are many who will say, now, you know, don't bring that word up too much. And those are the ones I worry about. Because this is a foundation. It's one of the foundation stones that makes marriage work, is that we commit to it. And we commit to it as in, I guess, every wedding marriage ceremony that I have been a part of, till death parts us, or till death do us part. It's really intended to last. And sometimes that commitment is what keeps us together when we're going through some very rough and rocky times. When people start thinking, oh, this is not good, and I made a mistake, and they start to want out, it's the very fact that when I did this, I intended to do this until literally death parts us. And in a number of books I've read, we talk about, different books, they talk about the stages that we go through in marriage. And if you've been married probably 10 years, 7 to 10 years, you've begun to recognize that marriages go through stages. When you add a child, that changes things. When you add children, that changes things. Health issues arise, aging. I mean, we understand. It's a stage that you go through. Well, the first stage that we go through, it's that marvelous stage. We usually call it the honeymoon stage. Oh, it's the honeymoon. Isn't it wonderful? It's the romance stage. It's when you look at each other and you just don't see anything wrong. Everything is right. There's no mistakes. There's no flaws. This is the perfect woman. This is the perfect man. And we tend to elevate them and put them on a pedestal. Now, remember, this is the early part of marriage. And that's how we are. We're just so enamored with each other. We're so excited to be together with one another. It's just so wonderful, and it's a bit unrealistic, as we're going to see, but nonetheless, it's a stage, and we love it. And Hollywood, you know, sort of made the marriage that way all the time, you know, and if it doesn't work that way, and if you ever lose that, then you just need to end that marriage and go get you a new one, you know. And that's not the out. Remember, this is commitment for the long haul. But nonetheless, it's such a wonderful stage. It's almost like they can do no wrong. Well, Solomon speaks of this loving, wonderful, romantic stage, and he does so in the terms of his society. And sounds a little awkward, but let's share with him. How beautiful, this is Solomon 4, 1 through 4, Song of Solomon, sorry. How beautiful you are, there you go, my darling. How beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats. I've never said that to Carla. But in this day and age, that was good. He said, goats that have descended from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of newly shorn ewes, which have come up from their washing, all of them which bear twins, and not one among them has lost her young. Romantic talk has changed a bit, hasn't it? I mean, it really has. Your lips are like a scarlet thread. I got that one. And your mouth is lovely. Your temples are like a slice of a pomegranate behind your veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with rows of stones on which are hung 1,000 shields, all the round shields of the mighty men. Well, this is the romance stage. Your eyes, they're like doves. Oh, how sweet that is. And your lips are like scarlet, and your neck is like a big military tower. Okay, you know, we modify it, but this is, and he goes on, he describes her from top to bottom. We're going to stop at the neck, okay? And he talks about all of her features and how enamored and how in love he is with his wife. And isn't that wonderful? It's so marvelous, but it doesn't last. Because what happens is we start really realizing the person we married has faults. During this stage, indulgence. Whatever you want to do, honey. Have you said that lately? You know, when you got married, it probably, oh, whatever you want to do. No, darling, what do you want to do? You know, Carla and I would argue for hours. No, you decide, you decide. I don't care, whatever you like. Maybe the wife really isn't enamored with sports, but her husband is. So she goes to him to the sporting events because she just wants to be with her man. And the man maybe doesn't really like to shop, but he says, you know, I just want to be with you. So he walks the mall and he goes shopping and he waits out for them to try on. You've been there, guys, right? And then, well, things, you know, kind of change. There's a lot of giving in and giving up. You know, you have your way. And frankly, there's a lot of ignorance. We just don't know each other yet like we're going to know each other. And so we start making advancements and seeing, and when we do, we see that there truly are problems. We see that there's some realities we really didn't anticipate. One of those realities is morning breath. Correct? I remember the Hollywood movies. They'd be asleep and wake up in the morning and look at each other with those goo-goo eyes, and then they start kissing. Ugh. It doesn't taste so good, does it, early in the morning? I mean, honestly, morning breath is a reality, but you don't think about that when you're going through the romance stage. You're learning the reality. You know, you lean over to kiss her and she says, go away. And you go, get some mouthwash. You know, you just, oh, it's just that stage. You gonna kiss me with that mouth? You know, I mean, we go through it, and here's my favorite. There's morning breath. Of course, I'm making fun because I'm a man and there's a woman in the picture, but there you go. I mean, it's, and how many other realities? Well, I'm not going to touch on many of them. They just have to do with daily bodily functions, and you get sick with each other. You take care of one another during the sickness. You see things you wish you could unsee. You can't, you grow up. It becomes real. And so you enter the reality stage, and Solomon once again is there. He writes, now his tune has changed a little bit. Proverbs 27, 15 and 16, a quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with a hand. Well, things change, don't they? All of a sudden you start to see the faults and the flaws, and the things that attracted you are still there, but now they're those irritating things that you've been overlooking, and you start thinking more about the irritating things, if you're not careful, than you do about the things that don't irritate you. And we really need to be careful about that. Because if you start concentrating on that, you're heading for trouble. You married that person for a reason. You married them. You pledged them your love and your faithfulness and your loyalty, and you're going to this through the end. And those irritating things, if that's all you think about, doesn't work. But if you remember the good things, and you have to train yourself to do that. You got to work at it. That's why we're talking about this morning. In Proverbs 21 verse 9, he says it's better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. So things have changed, haven't they? All of a sudden, the lady that you had on the pedestal is down in the gutter. And you're not appreciating her like you once did. And she's not appreciating you. And the reality starts setting in. One fellow said his delight turned to disillusionment, his dating to debating, his romance to resentment, and the ideal to an ordeal. That is reality. You start understanding truly who you married and what it's going to take, especially with the romancing of Hollywood that they've done with marriage and so on. It's we've got to learn that nurturing marriage, it's a lifelong commitment. It's a till death do us part commitment as well, and it takes work. And if you enter it with a fray mind set and a sense that it's different than that, you're going to have some trouble. This is the reality stage we go through. One wife, about 2 months after she'd been married to her husband, came to the minister that had officiated, and she was complaining. She came to him and she said, I got false advertising before I married him. And the minister, trying to be helpful, you know, said, false advertising. Don't you remember that you said that you were going to take him for better or for worse? And the wife replied, yeah, but he's a lot worse than I looked for him to be. Yeah, well, that's what happens. You start seeing those realities, and you have to deal with that. In this stage of ordeal, we oftentimes find dullness sets in, complacency sets in, we stop working on it, and that's why it's important to realize this is where you really need to be alert and to make the effort to get this thing to last. Dan Erickson, he wrote in one of his books, what are the 7 stages of a cold? You know, sniffles. Okay, so I found a picture. There she is. She's sick. So here, I'm just going to read. He says, the first year of marriage, the husband says, honey, I'm worried about my little girl. You have a bad sniffle. I want to put you in the hospital for a complete checkup. I know the food is terrible there, but I have arranged for meals for you to be sent in from your favorite restaurant. Oh, isn't that lovely? Well, year 2, here comes the cold. Listen, sweetheart, I don't like the sound of that cough. I've called the doctor, and he said I can bring you in this afternoon. Just rest in bed until it's time to go. 3rd year. Maybe you should lie down, dear. I'll make supper tonight. Do we have any cans of soup in the house? Okay, fourth year. Look, dear, be sensible. After you've fed the kids and washed the dishes, you really should go to bed. Yeah. Fifth year. Why don't you take a couple of aspirin? Sixth year. Please gargle or something instead of sitting there barking like a seal. I think I'll sleep on the couch tonight. Seventh year, would you please stop sneezing? What are you doing? Trying to give me pneumonia? You better sleep on the couch tonight. And that honestly is the way it goes. We stop appreciating. We start getting irritated. We start focusing on those things more than the things that attracted us. And all of a sudden we've gone from romance to reality. And that often leads us to the rethinking stage. And this is where a lot of trouble comes in our nation today and in our concept of marriage. That's when the ideal turns into an ordeal and you start thinking, what I need here is a new deal. And divorce has reared its head. And it does, and it still does, and it will if we don't understand marriage is something that we must spend time nurturing. Because, folks, that new deal is not an option. There's the romance stage. That's the perfect ideal. The reality stage, that's where the ideal turns into the ordeal. And the rethinking stage is when we often think, well, I just need a new deal. Need to get somebody different. Well, that's why we're talking about the long haul and the commitment, because if we don't understand, if we haven't made that kind of commitment to the marriage, this kind of thinking can literally get into our minds, and that deal is simply not optional. And what good things come from this? Well, first, with this long haul mindset, we're going to be more likely to marry right in the first place. I mean, you get one go at this. And I got to admit, when I was at Harding and looking around, you know, I was really thinking, wow, I've got one go. I want to get the right one. Well, I told you, I married above myself. That was God's grace, not my doing. I got a far better deal than Carla did. But you want to make the right choice. But what if you don't? What if you come to a marriage and you've never met each other before? The first time you meet is on your wedding day. Got something to share with you about that here in just a minute. I mean, but when you come with a long haul, you're going to be very careful about who you choose. I mean, some of the things that just amaze me about adults, usually I think of Hollywood, is, you know, they meet somebody, they marry, and 3 weeks later they're divorcing. And they do it over and over and over again. And you think, what is going on? Well, They don't understand what it's about. And are they happy? I guarantee you they are not. They're miserable. Because that's not the way life works. Then, if we think about this, this way. Say you got to buy one house in your life. That's it. Now, I know you go to the apartment, you start out poor, but you get to the point, and here's the new law. You can buy one house. How careful are you going to be when you buy that house? And even when you do, when you try to find what you think is the perfect house, I guarantee you, you're going to suffer buyer's remorse. Because once you get into the place, you start seeing all the flaws. Correct? Have you been there? Oh, we found the perfect house in Davenport, Iowa, and boy, that thing had more problems you could shake a stick at. But we thought it was wonderful, and then you realize what you get. That's the way it is. So you become very careful about who you're going to pick. Someone said this, I think it's very true. If the new deal is not an option, we're more likely to do whatever is essential to make our marriages work. And someone said, marriage is like twirling a baton, turning handsprings, or eating with chopsticks. It looks easy until you try it. Well, I cannot twirl a baton. I could do handsprings, but I wouldn't even want to try now. And I have never eaten successfully with chopsticks. I always go to my fork. You know, it takes work. That's exactly what we're trying. You see, a good, strong marriage isn't so much built on compatibility as it is built on commitment to the marriage. And we need to understand that. We also, in this long run, need to understand and embrace each other's differences. And we are different. And thank God for the difference. I'd hate to marry somebody who's like me. I'm glad I didn't have to marry me. I get tired of being me all the time. You ever go through that? Sometimes I wish I could put me over there and just leave and go be somebody else. I just would love to be perfect, but I can't make it yet. Only by the grace of God. And so you understand that there are going to be differences and you embrace them. And if you don't understand this, then you come to that point in a marriage where people say, before we were married, we had all this stuff in common, and now that we're married, we have nothing in common. Well, you do have things in common, but it changes. It's different, and it's for the long haul. And again, if we understand that, I think that will be beneficial and help us to nurture our marriages. I absolutely marvel at how God puts opposite people together. Have you noticed that? I mean, honestly, he puts people who are complete opposites together. Now, nobody point a finger, no elbow jabbing allowed, okay? But here we go. One spouse is an early riser, the other wants to sleep till noon. That was Carla and I when we first got married. I got up and was ready to take on the world. She just, leave me alone. She just loved to sleep. Well, things change when we have children. Now I'm the one who likes to sleep in, and she's the one who gets up early. That's the way it goes. But you marry opposites. One loves to talk. The other, you know, they've got a gift of gab. The other is deaf and dumb. Right? Not really wanting to let everything out. One is a people person. The other loves to be around groups of people. The other's more comfortable being alone. One loves to go out. The other likes to stay home and is a real homebody. One likes to spend money. The other's probably a tightwad, or we say that. But they're very different. We marry opposites. Have you noticed? We truly marry people who are very different than we are. Gary Chapman, in one of his best-selling books, says that we communicate love differently. I needed to know that. I like to express love. I'm more verbal. I'm a touchy-feely person. And I'm sorry if you're not. I just think, boy, since I love it, you know, you'll love it. And not everybody's that way. But there are others who are not. And that's the whole point. So we communicate love in different ways. Now, I showed this to you years ago. One of my favorite movies. It's Fiddler on the Roof. And I hope it works. But if you know Fiddler on the Roof, and I highly recommend the movie. It's really entertaining. A lot of great lessons in it. But Golda and Tevye have married. They've got three daughters. And anyway, I won't tell you the whole story. But they've been married for 25 years. And hopefully the clip is going to work.
Love. Golda, do you love me?
Do I what?
Do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well?
With our daughters getting married and this trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go lie down. Maybe it's indigestion.
No, Golda, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well,
for 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
Golda, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared.
I was shy.
I was nervous.
So was I.
But my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other. And now I'm asking, Golda, do you love me?
I'm your wife.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love him?
Well?
For 25 years I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years my bed is his. If that's not love, what is?
Then you love me.
I suppose I do.
Then I suppose I love you too. It doesn't change a thing, but even so, after 25 years, it's nice to know.
How often do you think they've said, I love you to each other? Sounds like. But there's the question. Now, Golda's response was, look at all I've done. I've been a faithful wife. I've been a mother to your children. I've milked your cow. I got tickled about that one. I've been faithful and served. And she's expressed her love for 25 years, hasn't she? But she didn't verbalize it. Tevye, on the other hand, says, I need to hear it. And that's why it's important. It's always important in a marriage for the couples to look at each other as often as possible. I mean, just stop, make them stop, look them in the eye and say, do you know how much I love you? I love you. But we're different, but still it's a need. So understand that. It's important that we express that to one another. And we realize that there are differences. Because sometimes when we hit this point, again, it's when we start looking for a new deal. But that's not what God tells us to do. As a matter of fact, he writes through Peter, the Holy Spirit, through Peter says, you husbands, 1 Peter 3:7, you husbands in the same way live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker. Since she's a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. What does he say? Part of the responsibility of a marriage is to live with the person you've married in an understanding way. And I know the women's movement has had a good influence in some ways and a terrible influence in others. The idea that a woman is like a man physically is just mistaken. Our muscle mass is different. Our makeup is different. And so Peter says, You big husky guys, you recognize your wife is not like that. She's different. She's made differently, and indeed she is. And we need to protect them and live with the understanding of their strengths and their weaknesses. That's our job. One of the reasons that I just hate to hear of physical abuse from a husband to his wife is that he obviously has absolutely missed this point. It's just not right or fair to turn on someone like that. Well, if you're a Christian and you're following these things that will enrich marriage and help our marriages, that's not going to happen. But there's going to be diversity in the marriage, and that's what he's calling upon us to understand. We've studied the temperaments here a number of times through the years. You've got the sanguine and the choleric. Those are the extroverts. You've got the melancholy and the phlegmatic. Those are generally the introverts. And let me ask you, how many of you married someone who's opposite to you in those areas? Any of you? Now, see, the melancholy and the phlegmatic are sitting there saying, please don't make me do anything to draw notice to myself, because that's their makeup. They're very comfortable being by themselves or being alone. They appreciate it, but you're probably married to somebody who's the exact opposite. They love people. They like being with people. They enjoy it, and it can cause problems if you don't recognize the differences between you. It helps, and there's a lot of help out there. many tests and things that really help us to understand, what it is. But it's just important for us to realize that we marry different people. You marry some folks who are structured. They prefer predictable routines. They thrive on organization. They respond well to deadlines. They respond well to rules and policies. They like to plan everything and stick to the plan. And when you don't stick to it, it upsets them. You know anybody like that? And then there are those people who love to live unstructured lives. They like spontaneity. They hate routine. They hate rules and they don't like deadlines. They would rather avoid the planning because that way you never know what's coming around the corner and it makes life exciting for them. And what happens? The structured marries the unstructured. And do you see the possible conflict? But that's also the joy. The wonderful thing about temperaments is Carla's a choleric melancholy. I'm a sanguine phlegmatic. I mean, we are exactly opposites. And Carla, I remember when we were dating and talking about getting married, she would tell me the things that she liked about me, that I did, that made her life, you know, richer. I caused her to laugh, and I'm thinking, who has trouble doing that? But she's a melancholy. Life is serious. She's very different in her view. And that's the strength and the weakness. She fills in where I am weak. She supplies her strengths. I fill in where she is weak. I supply where, you know, my strengths there. It's the way God seems to desire for this to work. So we usually marry somebody who's different. But the final and last thing, we have these differences. We've studied it. If you want to talk about it later, be glad to talk to you or give you the information. But the final step here in nurturing a marriage is the most important thing. You realize it's a commitment long term. You realize that there are differences there and you deal with it. And the most important thing is to invite God into your relationship. When God designed marriage, He intended for the family to function around Him. He intended to be the center of every family. And that's how family was made. And when we do that, it works. And when we don't do that, that works too, except in the negative way. That's why it's so important to bring God into a marriage. Solomon, he writes about this in Ecclesiastes 4. He says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there's not another to lift him up. When they run that commercial, I've fallen and can't get up. I think of this passage. They're alone. They're by themselves. So what do? You buy this little button so when they're alone, they can press it and you can come and help them because they're alone. That's the idea. The other helps you. You're not alone. If you fall, the other one lifts you up. But woe to the one who falls when there's not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. The third strand, Almighty God. You put yourself, you put your spouse, and you put God in it. And folks, it will nurture and make a marriage what it needs to be. Almost done, guys. In his book, Love, Sex, and Lasting Relations, Chip Ingram points out, and I think this is so good why I wanted to share it with you. He says, here is the way the world looks at finding a mate and marrying. And I think he's absolutely right. This is the world's view now, not God's or the Bible's. He says, the world says, number one, find the right person. Now, I want to make you notice or get you to notice immediately. It's not about yourself. It's about getting somebody that you like. It's really a very self-centered thing. So you find the right person. You want them to be the way you want them to be. It's not about you. Okay, second, fall in love with them. And then third, fix your hopes and dreams on this person for your future fulfillment. I don't know how many times in marriage counseling I've seen this. A husband expects his wife to fill his life, and a wife expects a husband to fill her life, but there's no God there. And you cannot do that. It does not work. And that's why so many are frustrated. And so if it doesn't work, if failure occurs, get a new deal by repeating steps 1, 2, and 3. Isn't that what we see? You go back. It's not change yourself. It's find the right person, fall in love, fix your hopes on them. And if they don't comply with your wishes, get rid of them and do it all over again. Do you see the selfishness? And maybe why it doesn't work? Well, here's the way God says to do it. Become the right person. When Josh was single, and Carl and I had decided he was going to be a bachelor all of his life, we would pray about it and pray that God would lead him to the right person. But time and again, the thought came up that, you know, God, we believed he would answer our prayers, but God was working on that person to get her right for Josh. And then it dawned on us, you know, maybe it's the other way around. Maybe God is working on Josh to get him right for that person. And that changed our entire way of praying about him getting married. And he found, like I did, someone far, far above himself. Tremendous wife and mother. Tremendous. What do? You become the right person. Be like Christ. When that's your goal, makes a difference. Walk in love. The definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13, love is, say it again, love is, say it out loud, love is, you don't want to hear that, do you? Love isn't romantic, it isn't frills, it isn't all goosebumps and goose flesh, it's not, what is love? It's patient. Right off the bat, God says, if you're really going to love somebody, you're going to have to work on it. Amen? And who works on it? He says, you do it. You. So many come into a marriage and say, I'm going to make her different. I'm going to make him different. I'm going to change them. No, you're not. The only person that we have the power to change, sitting where you're sitting and standing where I'm standing. I can change me, but I can't change you. So, walk in love. Fix your hope on God and seek to please Him through the relationship. And if it doesn't work, what do? Go back and repeat steps 1, 2, and 3. Work on yourself. Walk in love. Love is patient. It's kind. It isn't jealous. It doesn't demand its own way. I mean, read the definition and say, God, help me to love my husband or my wife like that. I guarantee you it will make a difference. And the joy that it brings to marriage, it's just, that's how God intended for it to be. Peter once again says this principle, in the same way you wives be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. What's he saying? Just what was said before. When you're working on yourself to become like Jesus Christ, your husband will notice it. When you're working on yourself to become like Jesus Christ, your wife will notice it. The job isn't to work on them. Peter says the job's to work on you. And look, if you're having problems in marriage today, I bet these principles would help. And I would imagine that if you're really looking at it, you may say, whoa, I haven't been doing that. Or maybe I could do a whole lot better. Maybe I could change a lot of things here. And that's true of all of us. But it comes by putting God in the marriage because He gives us the strength to do this. So we get to the invitation song. You may be sitting there thinking, you know, I really do need to do things differently. I need God's help, and we invite you. Maybe what you need to do is reach over and take your husband or your wife's hand and give them a squeeze, or when you get home or when you have the opportunity, just go to them and tell them, number one, I love you, and number two, I'm in this thing until death parts us. I'm committed to this relationship. We're going to make it. Maybe that's what's needed. Maybe what's needed is to say, I really haven't been walking with God. I know I should, but I really haven't. I haven't been loving. I haven't been patient. I haven't been kind. I have been self-seeking. I have been jealous. I've been doing everything that love isn't and expecting to get love back. Doesn't work that way. Work on yourself and quit focusing on the faults of the other person. It makes a tremendous difference. And maybe today's the day you'd like to say, I want to get Jesus in my life because I need Him and I've been living without Him, and that's where the problem is. So we're going to offer the invitation to you. If you believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, if you're willing to repent of your sins, to confess that faith in Him, and to be baptized into Christ, we invite you to come today and we'll assist you. If we need to pray with you, we invite you to come. If we can help you in any way, please come and tell us what we can do while we